B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, final hour of your calls here on Felger and Mads on a Tuesday, January 12th. We're brought to you by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub, and the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston. Catch us anytime on the app or online, 98.5thesportshub.com. The replays, so every hour posts that night or the next morning, so you can catch up with us at that time. We got a lot on the table, all the football stuff with Bedard. We did our Josh Allen debate earlier. He's still not buying fully on Josh Allen, which I find surprising. We talked very little about the Belichick and Medal of Freedom story, but we can circle back to that this hour if you like. We talked a lot about Mac Jones last night in Alabama, and could that be a guy for the Patriots in the draft coming up in April, whether that's in the first round or not. The NBA and their COVID protocols and Kyrie Irving, just a stunning story. We even did a little Red Sox and Andrew Benintendi being on the block. Maz won't be sad to see him go. Maz is long a critic of Andrew Benintendi. So, back to your phones here on everything as promised. Phil in Revere with the Patriots Thought. Hi, Phil.
Yeah, I just want to say, first of all, birthdays. They have birthday weeks now, belated birthdays. It's unbelievable what they got. So, forget about
it's one
day. It's a month now. But with Brady, it makes you sick to see because he's still playing phenomenal. But the kid that... for Washington, Heineke, the kid played good, so he was here. You don't want to take a guy in the first round or anything like that, because guys like that are out there. Guy looks like he could throw more than 5 touchdowns a year. So,
well, he would be better than Cam Newton, but all of a sudden, people want Heineke. Maz, how do you feel about that?
Well, so look, I'm okay if you want to bring in Heineke, or I like Kyle Allen on that roster too. I would tell you that Washington's got a quarterback to move, but let's not get stupid. Let's not all of a sudden think that bringing in Taylor Heineke solves your problems. You want to bring him in to compete for the job, you know, to enhance the overall depth in your operation? Sure. But, you know, if you think all of a sudden you bring him in, you're going to turn around the franchise, I think that's asking a lot.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with something he said there more, that you don't need to find a quarterback in the first round. You do, in the first or second, maybe the third. Beyond that, your Russell Wilsons, Brady, even Dak Prescott, those guys are unicorns. If you want a franchise-changing quarterback, you got to take one in the first couple of rounds.
Okay, but by the same token, Murray, if you're sitting there at 15 and the quarterback shouldn't be drafted 15th if he's Sam Ponder, is it Sam the wife or the husband?
Sam's the wife. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'd take her 15th overall.
Definitely.
For sure. Christian Pott, you know, he doesn't deserve to be drafted where he's drafted, but you're sitting, you know, you can't just take a first-round quarterback to say, look, we took a first-round quarterback. You can't do that.
Well, that's why, because I've resigned myself to the fact that this team's going to suck for a while. So take another position player and then figure out quarterback maybe with a free agent that, you know, can at least can throw the ball.
I mean, the worst thing you could do is take one just to take one. Like, that's a mistake. So if it gets to the middle of the round and all of a sudden you say, well, yeah, we like Mac Jones, but we have doubts, then don't take him. Go take a defensive lineman. I told you. I want Bill in that first round draft in front seven on D. Mike, they couldn't stop the run this year. So, you can go get a quarterback who's going to take a couple of years to groom anyway, and you're still not going to be able to stop the run. Draft to your strength early on in this draft and then see what you can do at quarterback with, you know, free agency or in the middle rounds.
Here's Matt, New Hampshire, with an NFL story. Hi, Matt.
Yeah, just really quick before I get to that, guys, the Kyrie Irving stuff. I mean, it's time for him to go away with Uncle Drew or Uncle Fester or whatever the heck it is and just go do his commercials and his movies and be whatever the hell he wants to be. I'm tired of listening to this bum. On the NFL front, did you guys talk about this already today with the Andre Johnson tweet about Jack Easterby? How in the hell is that man still employed down there? I mean, it seems like him and Casario are about to just throw a complete, you know, coup and start getting rid of whatever good talent they have left there. I mean, what do you guys think about Easterby being in place with Casario now being hired? I wonder how those two are working in cahoots to one another.
So I think that people are blaming the wrong guy there in Houston. Obviously, Jack Easterby is a kook. You know, it's like, you know, what some form of Tony Robbins, Alex Guerrero, like, you know, he's got some sort of weird hold on people, including the folks here, by the way, because they were all in on Jack Easterby here. Make no mistake about it. Bill really gave him the push here at the NFL level to get him to the next spot.
He's a con man.
So whoever Jack Easterby influenced here, he had a position of prominence here. Don't forget this now. It's not just like we got boobs like Cal McNair in Houston falling for the Jack Easterby stuff. You kind of fell for it too now, for a time anyway. Maybe somewhere along the way you broke the spell. But he was making decisions for you too. So, like, let's not forget that. So he's got some sort of weird sorcery working for him there, Murray.
Or sorcery.
Sorcery. What'd I say?
Sorcery.
Yeah, he's good with a good Bernays as well. But,
yeah, you know, so pesto, marinara.
He's got some mind stuff working. But the issue's Cal McNair, the owner. And, again, another Spalding Smales. Another kid that got handed the team by daddy and now – this is the guy, and, you know, this is just the guy to get influenced by the sorcerer and, you know, to follow, because he's probably a mental nitwit. He's probably a mental lightweight. And so a guy like Jack Easterby can get to his side and be a position of influence because the owner's kid is some halfwit. And so there you go. And now Jack Easterby's making decisions there, and that's what's going on.
Watson has to be kicking himself for signing that extension.
Oh, totally. What a mistake. I was surprised he did.
Oh, me too.
Blame the owner. Blame the owner for falling for Easterby's crap. Do you know that Cal McNair and the Texans, they paid a headhunting firm called Korn Ferry.
Yes.
They paid Korn Ferry, the headhunting firm, somewhere between $100,000 and $1 million. And Mike Florio writes that it was believed to be $600,000. Okay? So they paid this headhunting firm $600,000 to line up finalists for their GM job. Mike Garofalo of the NFL Media reported that then Korn Ferry lined up five guys, and Nick Caserio was not on the list. There was an executive with Pittsburgh who was supposed to be number one on their list. Louis Riddick there on ESPN was also on their list, and three others. So Korn Ferry came up with five guys. The Texans paid him $600,000 to line up those five guys. And then at the last minute, Jack Easterby, you know, gets to Cal McNair, and the next thing you know, Nick Caserio's there. Right. And they just took $600,000 and ripped it up. And so that's what happens when the billionaire's kid takes over the team. That's what happens.
I'll tell you, I want to find out more about this Easterby story. I mean, somewhere along the line, there are going to be details that come out that this guy's like one of the great con men in American history. I'm not kidding you. Like, there is something there with this guy that he does. He casts a spell over people. He completely just captivates them in some way, gets into their heads, and has them doing things that he wants to do. It's weird.
Well, and I think
it is weird.
It feels to me like Cal McNair is an easy target. Like there's the mark right there. Cal McNair. What did Andre Johnson tweet out there, Murray?
Give me one sec. He put out, this was just a little while ago.
And was Andre Johnson even there when Easterby got? I don't think he was. He's long gone, right?
Yeah, he's been gone for a while now.
Yeah, he must be talking to Watson, though. That'd be my guess, is that there's some sort of relationship there.
He wrote, if I'm at Deshaun Watson, I will stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Jack Easterby has walked into that building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization, and for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic.
Okay, so he's calling out Jack Easterby. How about the owner that gives him a seat at the table?
Well, I think that's what he means by someone can't, you know, see what's going on.
I mean, that's the story to me on that one. Well, back with your thoughts here on Felger and Mass. Don't go anywhere.
Felger and Mass. Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com. Your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Mass.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment.
I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Mass.
You don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I was in the plane and they handed me a letter, and it was from Coach Belichick. And He wrote me the most beautiful letter.
Our friendship goes back many years, and I think anybody that's spent more than 5 minutes with me knows I'm not a political person. My comments are not politically motivated. I have a friendship and a loyalty to Donald. A couple weeks ago, we had Secretary of State Kerry in our locker room. It's another friend of mine. Can't imagine two people with more different political views than those two. But to me, friendship and loyalty is just about that. It's not about political or religious views. I write hundreds of letters and notes every month. Doesn't mean I agree with every single thing that every person thinks about politics, religion, or other subjects. But I have multiple friendships that are important to me, and that's what that was about.
All right, so again, following up on the story here the last couple of days, we played the Trump reading of the letter in his campaign speech 4 years ago, a bunch yesterday.
I was in the plane.
Belichick responded to it. I'd forgotten that Belichick, you know, actually answered to it at the press conference the next day. And so that was that sound, that follow-up sound. Just to get us back into this, and Belichick, I'm sure you've heard by now, has declined the offer to accept the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And he is being roundly supported and praised for it. You know, Shaughnessy posted a column this afternoon calling it the best move that Belichick has ever made. And, you know, people are fawning over Bill Belichick with this decision. And the irony there is that I think that if it were up to Bill solely in a vacuum, he'd still go. I get the feeling he's doing it for reasons other than his personal belief that it's wrong to do. In other words, if it had not been reported and people didn't know that he was going down there on Thursday, he'd probably go do it. And if it were in a vacuum and just solely up to him and there weren't any other considerations about his locker room or his family or his employer or the court of public opinion, if those things didn't exist in this story, I think he'd be down there. I think he'd be down there getting that medal. And I think he responded to the outcry that came about after it was reported that he's going down there. Because as Shaughnessy says, I said it was last Thursday this was put on the schedule. I think Shaughnessy says it was last Tuesday, before the Capitol riots, that, you know, the Wall Street, so he's quoting a Wall Street Journal report. The Wall Street Journal reported today, I think, that Belichick was offered the award prior to the attack on the Capitol. So that doesn't even mean, so I misread that. I took that to mean last Tuesday. That could have been at any point prior to the attack. So the attack happens on Wednesday, right? The attack happens on Wednesday. Belichick could have canceled at any point. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And he doesn't. He only cancels after it gets out Sunday night that he's on the schedule to go down there on Thursday. So that leads me to believe he's reacting to the reaction, not to the actual events or the actual nuts and bolts of the story. He's reacting to the reaction. And I think he also has a tip-off and a giveaway in his statement there, saying that he isn't going to go, when he writes, the decision has been made not to move forward. Like, he didn't say, I made the decision. He doesn't say, I have declined to go. He doesn't even put a pronoun to it. He just says, generically, the decision has been made, which implies to me that it was a group decision or there were things other than just his own personal belief or preference. And he also puts in there in that same paragraph that he recognizes that he represents more than himself. He represents his family and the Patriots, thereby implying that this would be a poor reflection on his employer and maybe his family didn't want him to go or face the pressure of him going or anything like that. So he's the whole statement to me speaks to external forces. The timing of it sort of speaks to him reacting to the reaction and not that he did it on quote-unquote principle. So that's just, you know, it's obviously the right thing for him. He's getting praised for it, and life's going to be much easier now that he's doing it. But I don't know if he believes in his heart of hearts that it's the right thing to do.
Okay, so when you say based on principle, again, are you saying that he supports what Trump has done?
Or he doesn't blame him. Or he doesn't think that Trump's responsibility for the Capitol attack rises to the level of him not coming. Okay, I mean, I'll put it to you like that. Because, Maz, why didn't he cancel last Thursday?
I don't know.
Why didn't he cancel last Friday? Why didn't he cancel last Saturday? Why didn't he cancel last Sunday? He only canceled after it was revealed that he was going down there.
Yeah, so again, I don't know. I can't answer that one for you. But it is possible that he just looks at it purely in personal terms, which is what the soundbite said. And Donald wants to give me this, and you know, so I'm going to go. But that once it became a public story, that now it was an issue. And so, like, the idea that he would have gone if this had been kept quiet, probably, maybe. But the fact that it became public... Well, Bill Belichick means something. I mean, Bill Belichick has, you know, a tremendous profile. And so him going when people do know about it says something. And I think he recognized that, or someone made him recognize that.
Well, you know what? You're right about that, Mester. I mean, not to cut you off, but it does. When it becomes a public story, the nature of the thing changes.
Absolutely it does.
Yeah.
Totally it does. Now all of a sudden it's, Bill, are you going to go? And he didn't think of it in those terms, or make, you know, and again, I'm not here to make excuses for him. I'm just telling you that whatever it is, it's the smart move. The right thing to do is stay away from it right now. Stay away. Because I don't think Bill supports a lot of what Trump promotes. I don't think Bill does. I don't think there's a lot of things I would say about Bill, but I would tell you that I think his father raised him with certain values. He went to a liberal college. And again, I cited the event earlier, where his father was the only white naval officer to remain in the officer's lounge when a black officer walked in. All the other white guys walked out. Steve Belichick stayed. And so I just think, you know, when you grow up with someone like that and you go to a college like Wesleyan, some of that's going to rub off on you, and it might just be who you are. So I don't think Bill supports Trump from a political standpoint. I do believe his comment there that it was personal. And if his employer or his family, maybe his kids, said to him, hey, what are you doing? Maybe he finally recognized, you know what, I got to make a sacrifice here for, and I have to pick my family and my employer over my friend, and I'm going to do it.
Well, and there's also, you know, there's loyalty, which is a virtue to a point. I mean, you can't, if you maintain your loyalty to someone who hurts people, then it ceases to be a virtue.
I agree.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Like, yes.
I think people take that way too far.
Yes.
I have to be loyal to them. You know, that's my friend. What do you expect? Loyalty is a virtue. Well, I'm sorry. Your friend is hurting people. You know, at some point you have to stand for right or wrong. So the loyalty thing only goes so far. And, you know, like I said yesterday, I think the events of last week crossed a line. Like that was... That to me is as bad of a thing as I've ever seen not as bad. It's the worst thing I've ever seen a sitting president do in my life. I'm 50 years old. So I wasn't really, I mean, I don't think it rises to the level of what Nixon did. I mean, and Nixon paid for it. I mean, I think Trump was partly responsible for getting people hurt last week. Killed. Like that was heinous. That was bad.
Well, and especially Mike, his whole platform has built on that divide and on riling people up and stirring them into a frenzy. And so when you do that with people politically during an acrimonious time or an antagonistic time, what's going to happen? Eventually someone's going to do something stupid.
So this might, you know, if you remain loyal, if you, you know, maintain the relationship with that out of personal loyalty, well, that at some point, something has to outweigh that personal loyalty.
No question.
I mean, I don't give credit to Billy Bulger for being loyal to his brother as his brother is running around and murdering people and wreaking havoc and going on this, you know, massive criminal enterprise that hurt scores and scores of people. Well, Billy was loyal to his brother. What do you expect? I expect at some point to you to think of people other than you and your brother and the mayhem, you know, there's a greater good question there.
Yeah. And in fact, I think it gets twisted. It's disloyal on the part of the person who's looking for the loyalty. So let me get this straight. You want to be an a-hole and you want to break laws or bring harm to people, and you're asking me to then sign off on it?
Right.
Where's your loyalty?
Right. So, you know, Trump, by making it public, I don't know who made it public. It's got to be someone in the Trump White, I would think. I mean, I would sure, if Bill just wanted the medal, he would have loved to have kept it under the radar and go get the medal and get out of there, and no one knows, you know, and I got my medal. So it had to have been someone from the Trump side that, you know, leaked that out. And it's like, well, that's just to give Trump a lifeline. That's just to give him some good PR, a celebrity endorsement here in the last minute. And so you're right, Maz, that does rise to a different level, you know, for Bill. And so, Well, he declined it, and I think he's reaping the rewards of it right now. So there's a follow-up on that story. One final segment of your great phone calls right after Big Jim Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You can listen to Felger and Mass on your phone with an 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
Frankly, it's what we deserve. We're a nation of idiots.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It could be. I don't know if I see him in the first round for them, if at all, for any team. Look, a lot of evaluation has to go into this guy because he's surrounded by so much talent. And that's not to degrade him. He might be great, but the popular opinion around the league is that this is Nick Saban's best team ever. And that's saying a lot. And, you know, look, is he AJ McCarron? Is he Jalen Hurts? Is he Tua? It's really hard to tell. It just from sort of first blush, and I've seen a little bit of him previously, it seems like Mac Jones is a product of the talent around him. I think he's a good facilitator. I think he has great protection. It just doesn't work like that in the NFL. And so I have a hard time making a big time projection on him. You know, everyone will go, oh, well, you know, there's a Nick Saban, Bill Belichick connection. So does that mean anything? Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Nick Saban's had a lot of quarterbacks over the years. We haven't seen one of them here. So, I just think that he's a good player. I think he's somebody that they're going to look at. I don't think they've made any sort of decisions on what they're doing at the quarterback position. But Mac Jones as a first-round quarterback sort of starting very early next season for the Patriots, I have a hard time seeing that.
All right, so that's Greg Bedard on Mac Jones, one of the topics today. I also have to get to the email of the day, Stu. Can we cue that up for me, if you don't mind?
It's the Moncast Email of the Day!
Dear Felga, I really hate you. And I think Maz is a boob.
The Moncast Email of the Day! Send one to Felger at 98.5thesportshub.com.
Email of the Day is protected by Mimecast, the number one cloud email security and resilience companion for Microsoft 365. Safeguard your organization against phishing and risks of ransomware. Visit Mimecast.com. That's Mime, M-I-M-E, Mimecast.com. Relentless protection, resilient world. We were talking earlier about the new NBA COVID restrictions, trying to tighten it up there. One of the things they're going to prevent the players from doing is slapping five between every free throw. And I went on a little mini rant about that should be a permanent rule, that when players started doing that some time ago, I found it ridiculous. And then they started doing it on misses, not just makes. It's like, when did that? That didn't happen when we were a kid, did it? I said, did Parrish and Bird high-five each other between every effing free throw? I don't remember that. Well, Steve writes in, as much as I would love to not blow you, Felger, Robert Parrish was actually the first to popularize the hand tap between free throws and did it every single time since then. Other players followed. People commented then that it was interesting because he would do it even after misses for encouragement. Just saying. Do you remember that, Maz? Do you remember Parrish being the guy?
I mean, I don't remember it being like, you know, he was some sort of trailblazer, you know, that he was the one who invented the thing. But like, you know, as you say it, would I have an image of McHale or someone reaching out to give Bird a...
Yeah, well, you know what? Those Maybe. Are just the a-hole kind of team to do it. That a-hole 80 Celtics team feels like, you know, bunch
I
of DBs.
You up on that one, didn't I?
It's a bunch of DBs. Yeah, Ainge, I'm sure. Like, you know, that crew, you know, your whole freaking crew in the 80s, that would be the team to do something like that and, you know, poison the rest of the league. We have to put up with this nonsense of these guys high-fiving each other after they miss a freaking single free throw in the first quarter of a November basketball game. I mean, that should be a permanent rule. I'm sorry. It should be. I stand by that. Whether it was the chief or whoever started that thing. It's ridiculous when it started. It's just as ridiculous now. What, Murray? What's so funny?
It just sounds like residual bitterness from your childhood having to watch the Bucks get their ass
sounds like
kicked time and time again by the Celtics.
Yes. It made it worse that they lost to a bunch of douchebags, too, that 80s Celtics team.
Still the greatest nickname ever, by the way, Chief. That is the greatest nickname ever.
Hateable group, that team. Anyway, let's just zip through these calls here, shall we? Stu, we'll do a little mini lightning round. Here's Michael in Mansfield. Go ahead. Or, I'm sorry, Matt in Mansfield. What do you got, Matt?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just got to – first of all, I want to start by saying I wouldn't take Mac Jones at 15. I don't think that's a good pick, but I was wondering what you thought about Devontae Smith. Does he have a chance of falling to 15?
No.
I know the history with wide receivers, but – he could be like the next Tyreek Hill or something.
Sure. That's why he's not going to make it to 15. Right, Murray?
The talk is if Miami is going to not trade that pick and hang on to Tua, like he's going to be gone within the top five. They'll take him at 3.
Yeah, no shot on a player like that.
Yeah, McShay's mock draft has him going 3rd to the Dolphins. And if you think about it, he'd be a perfect fit, right? Reunited with Tua. And also they could use an explosive playmaker in the passing game.
We've got Dean in Shrewsbury on the Kyrie Irving story. Hi, Dean.
Felger, I don't get you. You nailed the artist formerly known as Kyrie as sinking the Celtics. Then he goes to the Nets, and you have the Nets as the best team in basketball. I wanted just to know after this latest episode where you have them.
Yeah, I got to rethink that, Dean. You know, I'll say – outside of Kyrie's nonsense, and you can't put that aside, I think they have the best talent in the East. That's the best team I've seen this year.
I mean, look at their first couple of games where they beat up on Golden State. They come here Christmas. They beat up the Celtics. Like, if they have everything together and Kyrie's not off the reservation, literally, you know, that team is probably the best team in the East. They could probably make a run to the finals.
So this is another reason to get infuriated at him. Because you look at it and say, okay, you won a title being, you know, on LeBron's coattails. You made a huge shot. Terrific. But now, are you going to win your own? And are you just going to, like, coast along now and not actually dig in and fight and compete for a title? If there is justice in this whole scenario, they don't end up with home court and they lose on the road.
But the a-hole factor with Kyrie is real. You know, I got to factor that in. If the Nets keep it together, I think they're the best team in the East. But what are the odds of them keeping it together with this clown running around the way he's running around? So I don't know. I mean, it's a fair point, caller. Tom and Quincy on Andrew Benintendi. What do you think, Tom?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, I heard a little bit of what Tony was saying earlier, but I was working, so I didn't hear the whole conversation. So I apologize if I repeat anything, but I have a couple things about him. I think one, he can be a very good player. And I think selling him now is selling really low. I didn't realize he went 4-for-39 Mavs last year. He batted 103.
He did.
And knocked out 17 times in 39 at bats. And he is like the poster child of how the analytical people can F up what your process is and changing your approach to the plate. If they let the kid play the way he can play and be a solid, hover around 300, 20 homers, 40 doubles, blah, 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 he's a good player.
I agree. Like
doubles hitter. Doubles a slasher.
Yeah.
You know? But that's not what the game now is launch.
No, and so again, so is this the kind of guy that's going to get squeezed out of the game? Because let's go back to the beginning. Okay, when he first got here. Isn't he fun to watch? Benintendi's a fun player to watch.
He was a little bit of a phenom.
Yeah, he sprays the ball around. He's a good hitter. You know, plays good defense. Now, again, the base running acumen, brutal. But it's not like he's slow. He's an athletic player. Like, so you look at that guy and you go, this guy's a ball player. This guy's a baseball player. They're trying to turn him into a softball player, which ruins the whole thing. So is this what you're going to do? You're going to squeeze that guy out of the game? And there's one other thing that does worry me about Benintendi. His whole life, he's been a phenom, okay? Got to Auburn and then exploded there, got to the minors, rampaged his way through there. Now he's having adversity for the first time. How's this going to go? How's it going to go? Can he handle it? or is he just going to implode and become like, you know, J.D. Drew, a guy that could have been, but should have been a lot better than he was? So I worry about that with Ben Attendee, too. I feel like they've ruined him, for one. And secondly, I worry about his ability to handle this.
Chuck in Medford on Bill Belichick. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, boys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want you to know that I think Belichick should have went for the medal. You know what? You know, 30 years from now, when his grandkids are, like, looking at the mantle, they're going to say, oh, Grandpa got awarded this medal. And it's sort of, you know, it's a little bit BS, right? You know, to put it all political. And, you know, as far as...
well, let me tell you, Chuck. Let me tell you what. Well, you know what I think Biden should do? Is give him the medal. But, you know, and I don't even care if, you know... who would follow this sort of stuff? But I have no idea if Trump has handed them out like chiclets, if he's handing them out a lot more than other presidents, or they all do this. Like, I don't know. I can't even tell you. So I don't know what if Biden is going to hand out a lot of these or a little of these or do what. But I think the right thing for Joe Biden to do would be to invite Bill in the first couple of weeks. Here you go. Here's your medal. You did the right thing last week. I'm going to reward you for it, and there's your Medal of Freedom.
Oh, and yeah, totally. It's a great point. It is. It'd be a great thing to do. And the other thing is, let's not kid ourselves either. You know, to the caller, Trump was using Belichick too. Okay, don't delude yourself.
Big time.
So you know, in the middle of this whole thing, and again, I know the date was set beforehand, but in the middle of this election controversy.
Well, no, but Maz, this is what I was talking about last segment. How did it become public? Because Annika Sorenstam and Gary Player, who people don't give two poops about, no one released that. That wasn't really, no one, that gives Trump no juice. But if Trump can get Belichick or one of his big sporting, you know, Bobby Orr, Jack Nicklaus, or all these guys that have supported him over the years, someone with some juice, that's a celebrity endorsement. So absolutely Trump was using
him. Oh, he was. He was totally using him. And so, you know, so Bill wasn't going to allow himself to be used by that, or his family wouldn't allow him to be used by that, or the Patriots wouldn't allow him to be used like that. Let's not go making Bill out to be the total, you know, the one who orchestrated this whole thing. Trump's the one that did. So again, I told you, I think the smart thing to do for Bill from the beginning was to not go. He chose the smart path. However he got there, he chose it.
Okay, final word comes your way right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Town Fair Tire is, here we go. For the guaranteed lowest prices on tires, go to Town Fair Tire, because nobody beats Town Fair
Nobody.
Tire. Nobody. I thought that they changed their copy there for a second.
No one. Reading no, something. Never.
No.
Nope.
Town Fair Tire. All right, Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal, joining the show for a Big Boy Tuesday playoff edition. Very prickly today.
Oh.
Was the big boy.
The man's in denial. Yeah. What do you want?
And with that comes the 10-question segment. Here's the recap put together by Hardy.
Mike, you there?
Yeah, good as you. This is my landline, yep.
Number 10, Greg, your thoughts on Frank Reich going for the touchdown at the end of the second quarter in Buffalo. Fourth and goal at the 4.
I actually liked it.
It was dumb.
No.
It was dumb.
No. No.
Oh, would you grow up?
Thoughts on Tomlin punting.
I mean, look, they had the Browns on the ropes at that time. If they get it...
Also dumb. God, these guys are stupid.
Thoughts on Baltimore stomping on the Titans logo at the end of that game.
I didn't have a problem with the logo stomping per se. I had two problems with it.
Greg, what should the Bears do at quarterback going forward?
I don't know.
What are you doing?
I don't know.
Pull the plug on this guy.
Tool bag question. Who is the biggest tool bag of Wild Card Weekend?
Marcus Peters. Jackass.
Excellent answer. Greg, do you like the new format?
It's all right, but I just don't like it.
Give me an assessment of the Philly coaching situation. Terrific.
Well, for...
terrific.
I think it's
terrific. Last one. Greg, why do you hate Josh Allen?
I'm kidding.
You overrated him from the beginning. Pull the plug on this guy. And I like Greg. Boy, could he be any more wishy-washy?
Oh, my God.
I didn't have a problem with the logo stomping per se.
I had two problems with it. But I had two problems with it.
Per se.
And no answer. You should never answer with, for the 10-second question segment. It's all right. That's like, so what? No, that means you actually hate it. If you're going to answer like that, then say you don't like it. It's just all right. You don't like it. But that's a beautiful tapestry that is Greg Bedard. He wrote me, and I am coming soon to Boston Sports Journal. He and I are going to do a Zoom session, film session, where he's going to put up film of Josh Allen, and he and I, via Zoom, I ain't getting in a dark room with him, but he and I, via Zoom, are going to go over the Josh Allen film.
Well, that ought to be good.
Oh, it's, yeah, but strap yourself in, Mass. First, Felger and Bedard on the film.
How do I get a ticket to that?
Get your popcorn ready, as someone once said.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.